Hi, this is Julie Copins at WVXU. If you've taken in our short preview of this weekend's Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra digital concert featuring You Have the Right to Remain Silent, you should be good to go. But maybe you're curious to hear more. The CSO is the first major orchestra to program this concerto, composed by Anthony Davis as a precursor to his 2020 Pulitzer Prize-winning opera, The Central Park Five. I had the great privilege of sitting in on a rehearsal for the recorded performance about a month ago at Music Hall, and then discussing the piece via Zoom with the composer Davis, clarinet soloist Anthony McGill, and conductor Louis Langres. Because contemporary music can be a heavy lift for classical audiences, and this piece comes at an especially weighty time, I wanted to share more of what they had to say. First, here's CSO Music Director Louis Langres talking about why this concerto, and why now.
When we decided that we would have a virtual beginning of the season, it was obvious that we had to change the repertoire to look for new pieces for smaller ensembles. But I mean, we all know there is this terrible pandemic, but the US are experiencing so many different crises on top of that, or in addition of that rather. Social, racial, financial, economic, political, etc., etc. So art is not neglecting or refusing to consider all these aspects. It's not about a political message. It's how an orchestra should address an artistic message to all these political, social questions, and we need art. So there were many pieces that I had to read. We felt that we had to present pieces from underrepresented minorities, from Black composers, and but also very important, great pieces from Black. If you just feel that you have to have a certain ratio, this is terrible, and it's not going to heal the problem and to solve the problem. So I read so many pieces, and Nate Backhuber, our vice president of programming, told me you should read this piece. It's very intriguing and powerful and interesting, and it certainly is. The title, I must confess, I didn't know what these words mean. I mean, I understand the English phrase, but what it really deeply means, I don't know. So I thought, yeah, the silent, you know, what is music? And then is music notes? So what is silence? Can silence be music, et cetera? So I started with this view of very poetical.
Because you yourself have never been arrested, to be clear. You've never been read your Miranda rights.
No, never.
No judgment.
Not yet. So opening the first pages and having this, you know, so vivid, energetic, and this mixing of rhythm, of waves, musical phrases, and then having the musicians of the orchestra having to speak, to be not only to deliver music, but to be almost like characters, like this Greek chorus, you know, ancient tragedies. And when you read the score and you have the strings first having to say, you have the right to remain silent, you understand that it doesn't sound like a happy piece. But at the beginning, it not knowing what it means, it was the musical message, which is this tormented and or in the lost, you know, like not touching the ground, having this sort of vertigo. And the raw energy, the immediacy, the freedom of improvisation. I'm so deeply impressed by the talent of Anthony McGill, because if I wouldn't have the score, it would be, I think, impossible on certain passage to know if this is written by Anthony Davis or if it's improvised by Anthony McGill, because he has this amazing talent to be so immersed in the piece that even when he improvises, it is still Anthony Davis. You know, it is in his style, it is in his language, it is in his own musical syntax. And isn't it wonderful? I mean, it's absolutely amazing. There is an inner joy when Anthony McGill plays, which irradiates everyone. And there is the joy to communicate. There is the joy to make the most beautiful and meaningful, to deliver this music. And when there is no music, then it's scary.
Next, clarinet soloist Anthony McGill walks us through the concerto's four movements: interrogation, loss, incarceration, and the dance of the other. And then he and composer Anthony Davis give us a few more things to listen and watch for.
One thing I was thinking about in the first movement, in the interrogation movement,
clarinetist Anthony McGill,
is there so much tension, you know, that it's designed to have that sort of tension. And part of this, part of the whole concept of like reading those rites is how can people in a certain type of interrogation, what I'm thinking about is how can you get people to confess something that they're not guilty of. And so what I hear in the music is a repetition of things at times happening where the character, my character, is saying over and over again, you know, I did not do this. I did not do this. I did not do this, you know, with the pitches aligned to it. Da-da-bim, ba-ba-bi, ba-da-bim, ba-da-ba. You know, this moment that happens in the music reminds me of that. You're saying over and over and over again. But part of the process of that sort of interrogation, which with a person in the power structure, wants you to say, they're asking you the same question over and over again. So at some point you will give up, okay? So that you break that person down by using different tactics. So that's what I think of when I think of an interrogation in general, is that the person, if I'm thinking about my character in this piece, that yes, I'm innocent. Let's just assume that. But the reason I'm having to repeat over and over again is that I'm saying that I'm innocent, but there is no, it's unrelenting in the questioning, in the interrogation of this person. That creates a sort of tension throughout the piece. And then there are moments of this pleading, because it's the moment where you start to doubt your own innocence in the piece, kind of, if you will. After the first movement where all of this tension and this interrogation happens, you understand in this story of one's character, of one's life, is that there are so many different types of loss. When you think of what can happen after a process of being interrogated or being falsely accused or being separated from one's family and jailed in the prison system and all of this stuff, there's so many different forms of loss. And in this movement, there's not only the loss of that is really emotional, this sort of thing like this, but there's also like you can kind of start to feel like you're losing your mind at certain points too. So the worlds that you go in and the colors are really fantastic, especially the more aleatoric moments where it's like the Kurzweil and the bass clarinet are kind of having this like amazing duets, and I'm playing this big instrument that I'm discovering for the first time, and yet there's so much pain and loss in the sound of this instrument that he uses in this piece that make it for me the pinnacle of the whole work expressively. because of the depth of the color of that instrument and what he allows the player to do in that, in this piece, is really striking to me. And he allows, you know, me, usually a straight classical player, to like pretend like I am Eric Dolphy or channeling some one of these people. That was actually, that's also one of the most fun, you know, the really fun part, aspects of the piece for me, is just to be able to like kind of channel my inner jazz musician, my inner, you know, that inner freedom of who I am as a artist or as a musician. So in a way, in the Lost movement, there is actually so much to be gained as a player. That's what's really interesting, that I don't lose at all, even though the character, there's all this music that brings up these feelings of loss, you know? And in the incarceration movement, it's really angular at times, and biting and articulated and pointed at times, along with the percussion. So he uses that in a way with the words that really bring that whole concept of alive. You can even hear like the cement on the walls. You can hear concrete. You can hear the banging of the sounds of a prison. You know, the sounds of jail, like the metal against metal. All these things that you can imagine are in this. You know, some based on like the way the clarinet can go against with the sith and the percussion and how they blend, and you could do anything. There's some crying out in the instruments, and that's kind of how I approach this movement as well. And then in the last one, you know, the dance of the other is amazing, because I was channeling some of my family history, just with dance and in general, because my mom was an artist and an actress and a dancer and a choreographer as well. And so the concept of playing music, of playing clarinet, of playing any kind of music, kind of is wrapped up in my own psyche with dance, because I can't play music without movement. Like, I can't sit still and play music just personally without movement, because it's such a part of how I grew up in my house. That's the reason we had actually music, and especially classical music, in the house at all, was because of my mom's connection with choreography, especially. And so the beginning of this, and this kind of moment, where is the dance of the other and this kind of rhythm, is something that is really just resonated with me. You can kind of feel it on the inside, and you can feel that sound coming from the old days, maybe the old continent, if you will. And so these movements, these rhythms, it's like you can't pinpoint it, but that's because it's old. You know, it's from like before, it's from a time long ago, but that you hear it and you feel like that music came from inside somewhere, deep inside. You didn't know you knew that melody until you heard it. That's how I kind of felt about that movement. Hmm.
Composer Anthony Davis.
My mother was a dancer too.
Oh, wow. No way.
No, she danced. She danced with Merce Cunningham with the back in the you know, like in the 40s and stuff, in the early 50s. Wow. So it's funny, you know, she was always fabulous. Yeah. So that was part of my childhood too, you know, and so I was always a terrible dancer though. So, but I hid behind the piano, you know.
I think it's great that to understand that you don't have to know everything about a piece the first time you hear it, but it is helpful to hear a piece more than once. So if it's possible to hear a stream of it twice or three times, or even hear the recording that's already out there in the ether, you know, beforehand, you'll discover stuff that you didn't know about it the second time, the third time, the fourth time, the fifth time around, because I know my own journey of it, of the piece, in not a very long time, took on an amazing, I went on an amazing trip, you know? So just like sometimes you don't know, you can pack a bag, but you don't know what you'll need until you go on that journey. You know, that's kind of what it's like with music sometimes with me, is that as long as you're prepared to go on a journey, you know, with openness, then you can often discover that you never, you the places, worlds that you never discovered, you never knew that you would love and discover. And that's how I feel about a lot of music, but especially my own short relationship with this piece. You know, as a performer, you only dream of being able to reach people and to make people think and make people kind of look at themselves, but also look at the world. As a performer, you also do that. And I think I will definitely be forever changed by having worked on this piece and gotten to play it, especially being able to kind of be in the same room, be in the room with Anthony Davis and Earl and the Kurzweil and Louis Langray.
Yeah.
And because I feel like I was changed, because, you know, some of what we do when as people in music and art is that we learn. And I think I managed to walk away from this piece having learned a lot about how I could use my voice on the clarinet in different ways, many different ways, with an instrument that I'd never played before in the contra, but also expressively and emotionally, not to mention where we are in today's society and the world with all the struggles that we have going on, and with the material that is within this piece, to be able to think about what our rights mean as people, what our freedoms mean as people and as musicians. So I have both of those coins, and how a piece like this enables me to bring those two seemingly simple concepts of what it means to be a person, a human, a musician, a clarinet player, and to express that outward to the world and share that with people through the gifts of Anthony Davis. And so it's an amazing thing and honor to be able to participate in something like that, which has been created before, but will be created again and again and again throughout time, hopefully, as a piece takes on a living voice through the musicians that perform it throughout time.
You know, hopefully we can, you know, after this, we can, they could be performed again, you know, and I'd love to work with Anthony again. I'll write something new for him.
That would be great.
People will tune into this stream. They'll take in this composition and this incredible musical collaboration that just happened in Cincinnati. We as a country are heading into a new era. We have a whole raft of issues to deal with. Is there something that we can draw from this piece, even from this experience, this musical experience, to recharge and to get our heads in the right place for the next stage of the struggle?
Want
to
go first?
We're still in the middle of things. I don't even know how it's going to happen in the next 2 days, you know. So it's crazy. I mean, I think it's you know, realize the vulnerability of people in this situation, and what I spoke about before, empathy. I mean, the idea of we've seen a president who had no empathy, none, didn't care about people dying from coronavirus, didn't care about, you know, trying to put in motion any kind of action that would maybe preserve life. I mean, it's a very tragic thing. And looking forward, we hope we have a world that has that compassion, and not you know, try to, you know, promote themselves using our division.
All of those things he talks about, compassion and empathy, that's what it really is about.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is about. And so that kind of empathy and that kind of connection, that sort of thinking about, in a way, the opposite of that, which is that sort of kindness in the world that we can get back to, you know, and the fact that we can relate to one another and kind of see that people are struggling, that people are in pain, that people, the most vulnerable people, as he mentioned, need help. They need our help. They don't need us to turn our backs on them. You know, we don't, you know, there's too much of that in the world as it is. And so we have to look at how that when people speak of justice, what they're really speaking of is empathy, as he mentions, is kindness, is caring about others that, you know, that may not be like you, right, that may not be close to you, that you may not know. And to somehow change that narrative, so we're thinking more about how can we help the most vulnerable, because they are the same as us.
Finally, back to Louis Langres with a rundown of the rest of the concert and what he hopes listeners will take away.
The structure of the whole program, starting with this Julia Perry piece, amazing Black composer from the 20th century, born in 1924 in Lexington, Kentucky, and who grew up in Akron, Ohio, and wrote this Homunculus CF, just the title. What does that mean? The homunculus, it was this little creature made by Faust, you know, Goethe's Faust, this little person made through chemistry, you know, Frankenstein sort of invention. And then Schubert's Unfinished Symphony, that after this completely abstract music, you will hear completely different, speaks also about challenges, about himself, about his own experience. It's so fascinating when you read that in the same time that he wrote these two movements, he wrote a poem which is called Mein Traum, My Dream. It's completely Freudian. And then the rage of his father, fury of his father, who banned him from the house. And certainly it's a piece full of tears, rage, and also hope and transcendence and transfiguration at the end. And then going to Anthony Davis' piece. So each piece is so powerful and singular. And together, because they are contrasted, so contrasted in style, in language, in time, and the time when they were written, 3 centuries, it makes a wonderful journey. And also having rehearsed and recorded this piece, so we spent several days together with the composer, with Anthony McGill also. It was a beautiful musical hug. You know, unfortunately, we are physically distanced. I hate the word socially distanced. It's not socially, it's physically. But we felt so close by playing this music together. It was certainly, the feeling was not distanced. The feeling was this big healing feeling of being able to make music together and to speak musically about these challenges, this terrible aspect of our society. That, but delivering in the same time a beautiful humanistic message. You know, this period is so terrible, so tragic, and so challenging. But having in the middle of this challenging time these little beautiful moments, which are perhaps even more beautiful because they are happening in the middle of these difficult times. So It's a blessing.
Now it's your turn to experience this timely and profound new work, and I hope you'll tell us what you think. The Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra streams You Have the Right to Remain Silent, along with Schubert's Unfinished Symphony and Julia Perry's Homunculus CF, starting at 8 p.m. Saturday, November 21st. You can watch for free on the CSO's Facebook, YouTube, or at cincinnatisymphony.org. The recorded performance will remain accessible online through December 12th. For WVXU and WGUC, I'm Julie Copins.